Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Brought to you by The Pint, Oodle Noodle, and OilersNation.com.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
And we are live at The Pint until 2 o'clock today. Downtown Jasper and 109th. You can email us at nationradio at theteam1260.com. And we welcome you to tune in to Nation Radio every Saturday. Our focus, Oilers past, present, and future, plus the NHL's biggest stories every week. Our guests today include Ian Walker from the Vancouver Sun. We'll talk about the Canucks, the Preds, and that unusual Game 1 in the series. Hopefully it'll be more entertaining for Game 2. I think part of the problem is the first round, all eight games were so good. And maybe one of the best ever. And it's going to take a little while, I think, to get into these new series, especially the Vancouver one, because it was a flat game. Todd Nelson from the Oklahoma City Barons will join us. We'll discuss the playoff run, the best Barons moving forward, and how coaches exit for the summer and what they do before they go. Emails, including one about Stu McGregor that has me thinking, and I'd like your input. And in hour two, Scott Cullen from TSN is using advanced stats. We'll talk to him about that, about the Edmonton Oilers article he wrote this week, and the draft this summer as well. And if we have time today, Anton Lander signed this week. We'll talk about that, and if we have time, we'll also roll an interview he did with the Team 1260 this week, a little bit about what he's looking forward to, about his season, how he felt everything went with the World Junior Championships, and how he's looking forward to coming here in the fall and hopefully earning a spot with the Edmonton Oilers. Very busy weekend after last night, Tampa Bay up 1-0 over Washington. Steve Yzerman, boy, he made some good bets this year at the deadline and then pre-deadline. Intelligent decisions, making his team basically on a collision course with the Final Four. He could be in there. A great game against Washington last night. It's possible the Bolts can meet Detroit in the Stanley Cup Final, at least so far. And Dwayne Roloson, what a pickup. Brewer looking good, too. And that team is on fire. I love their post-game media conferences. Both coaches are doing really well. San Jose won in overtime over Detroit last night. I thought Howard was the key there. Vancouver ahead of Nashville heading into tonight's game. And Boston-Philly gets started in about an hour from right now this afternoon. So, Jordan Eberle scored twice for Canada in the World Hockey Championships in a 4-1 win over Belarus. Germany surprised Russia 2-0. I think Canada plays like France or Yemen or somebody. It's a low, low level team that they're playing next time around. Oilers signed Lander. We'll talk about that. He played 18 minutes a night in the Swedish Elite League. As a team leader and as a teenager, won close to 50% of his face-offs. His Desjardins equivalency around 34 points in Andrew Cogliano territory. So I think he's going to be a guy that we might want to think about possibly making the NHL team in the fall, although he definitely is an option for Oklahoma City as well. That and more coming up today, and as I mentioned before, we welcome your emails anytime here on Team 1260 and Nation Radio. It's Nation Radio at theteam1260.com. Yesterday, I got a chance to spend a few minutes with Ian Walker from the Vancouver Sun and talk about all kinds of interesting things. We began talking about his Twitter account, which is Walker Big Talker. It's quickly becoming my favorite. I didn't know if I'll ever see a big hip check like that again.
Well, you know, it's one of those things. I'm pretty fortunate. There's about 8,200 people who find some sense of humor and maybe a little bit of insight and hopefully are entertained by me a few times a day. I really try to take a little bit of a different approach. I think a lot of people can just put stats relate information from practices and things, which I think is important. But I like to show a little bit of side of my character and my personality. And, you know, I get to go to places and be at things that I think a lot of people maybe wish they could, too. So I'd like to take the people with me and just sort of take them on my journey. And at the last of things I want to do is take myself too seriously.
I like it because you reference Urban Dictionary a lot, and it saves me from going over there. So,
well, that's right. You got to be hip to be square, right?
I'm so that. Hey, last time we were on with you, I got all kinds of heat afterwards because I didn't ask you about Biff Naked enough. So I hope you don't mind. I got a couple of questions to lead with. Did you guys watch the Royal Wedding together?
No.
Okay. So my next question, what was she wearing, would not be of any benefit at all then.
My wife or Kate?
Your wife.
You know what? Her wedding dress was beautiful. I can tell you that much. And she had a nice little twist with it because I didn't really want to know much about it, including the cost. Yeah, I was surprised because at the wedding, it was she had the sleeves were cut off. So she had a lot of her tattoos showing. Mm-hmm. But it was a long flowing gown. And then at our reception, she happened to stand up on a chair and revealed that it turned into a miniskirt.
Wow. Very nice.
Yeah, very classy, very elegant, very very her.
Well, and I understand that, and I know too much about this, and we won't belabor it, but I understand it was rather traditional. It surprised the media that was there because it was more traditional than they thought it was going to be.
Well, you know, our the ceremony itself was at a church, and both our parents, my wife's family were missionaries, and they adopted her in India. When she was 6 days old. And then my parents are ministers with the Salvation Army.
Oh, really?
So we wanted to, and that's probably, I think, was our biggest connection, was we sort of led these parallel lives where we grew up in these very religious homes, and then we both sort of rebelled and were the black sheep to the family. And she went off and shaved her head and grew a mohawk and joined a band, and I sort of left home at an early age to go off to school and pursue university education and things like that. And but we wanted to definitely honor our families that, you know, definitely played an impact in our moral structure anyways. And so we did the church service for them and our guests. And then the reception was at a Indian restaurant to pay some tribute to Beth's heritage in terms of her biological parents. What it was we didn't have the throw the bouquet, and we didn't have a DJ or a band, but we had a Bandra troupe come through. And this Bandra troupe played Indian music on all the sitar and all the different East Indian, you know, sort of instruments. And then we had a Bollywood dance troupe come in and perform for our guests. And it was a little bit of them and a little bit of us, and it really worked out really well.
That's fabulous. You know, if my wife is listening, she's like, and my husband can barely remember the date we were married, and look what you can remember these years later about your wedding. Good job, man.
Well, you know, and I also went and got it tattooed in Roman numerals on my wrist, so I'd never forget. So there's a tip for you.
Wow, man. Good job. Well, let's turn to what we're here to talk about, which is the NHL, hockey, and the Vancouver Canucks. Preds looked very flat in Game 1. As you pointed out, Barry Trotz was probably the most passionate Pred near the rink that night. Do you expect a lot more from them for Game Number 2?
I do, and you know, and I think... you know, a lot was made of the Vancouver Canucks and was there going to be sort of a hangover from their Game 7 overtime victory over their arch enemies, the Chicago Blackhawks. And, you know, there wasn't really. You know, Vancouver came in and played a good game. They had a lot of opportunities. If it wasn't for Pekka Rene, the game would have been a lot different than the score. But I think, you know, I think maybe what the media and maybe some fans underestimated is there may have been a bit of a letdown for the Nashville, who had never advanced to the second round before, you know, in their 13 years and have been to the playoffs, you know, last six of the last 7 years. So, you know, that's something that Barry Trotz addressed last night, too, was, you know, they can't be happy. They can't be satisfied with just getting to the next round. This is the highest form of hockey that this team has played in their history, and they definitely have to rise increase their intensity and their ambitions. Should they want to continue much further?
You know, one of the things that I was looking forward to this series, because, you know, you see Nashville as a team, and for somebody like the Oilers, they're a team that Nashville seems to develop defensemen wonderfully, better than almost any other NHL team. It's an opportunity for them to play on the big stage, and it was a disappointment, especially to see some of those really quality people like Shea Weber maybe not have the game that they were hoping for.
You know, as I wrote about today in terms of Barry Trotz being a great quote, especially after the sort of mundane one day at a time and things we were getting from Joel Quenneville and Alain Vigneault in the Chicago series, you know, I was impressed by Shea Weber for standing up and being accountable for his play. You know, he had a glorious opportunity in the final dying minutes, if not seconds of the game, and with a one-timer, with the net open, and he was the first to say, "Yeah, I don't know how I missed that one," and ended up burying it in the corner, was the first to say that everyone needs to look in the mirror, and no one played well, and he was the first to admit that he led that brigade. So I think that goes a long way, in at least they know they're not trying to kid themselves. You talk about defense, and I was fortunate to cover the WHL for a lot of years before I got on the NHL beat, and Cody Franson and Jonathan Blum, former Vancouver Giants, and so I know them very familiar with them, covering them since they were 15 years old. And I spoke to them afterwards, and there's a real parallel between the Predators and the Vancouver Giants, coached by Don Hay. And they always had this sort of mantra, will over skill, when the Vancouver Giants were doing those years where they had back-to-back Memorial Cup appearances, winning the Western Hockey League final one year and then winning the Memorial Cup the home the next year. And that was sort of their whole identity was they didn't really have the superstars, but they had a team that was going to buy into a system. They were going to play for each other. They were going to trust each other. And I think that's what Barry Trotz has built in Nashville. And that's what's going to have to definitely get them past the Canucks is will over skill.
You wrote a wonderful article on Weber, I think it was today or yesterday, with regard to his mom. Can you give us a little bit of the backstory there and tell those who haven't read it about Weber's situation?
Yeah, Shea Weber, again, I was fortunate to cover him, when the Giants were playing Kelowna and knew his mom was ill. But when Shea was 15, and again, Shea is a great story, went undrafted into the WHL and played on a couple of Memorial Cup teams and won one in Kelowna on home ice. And I knew his mom was ill. She was diagnosed with a brain tumor when Shea was 15, and so he was going off to Kelowna with his mom, fighting this life-threatening illness, and the doctors managed to remove most of the tumor, and for the next 5 years she led a relatively normal life and was able to see a lot of Shea's accomplishments and his brother's Brandon's accomplishments, and was there when Shea was drafted by the Predators in the second round, and was there when Shea raised the Memorial Cup over his head a couple of years later in 2005, I believe, and then shortly after Shea made the Predators in 2006, 2007, full-time, the headaches started coming back, and further tests revealed that it was the tumor had spread to a place in the brain that was inoperable, and chemotherapy and radiation was not going to be able to help the situation. So, of course, she was on medication and slowly started to deteriorate. Her short-term memory loss was impeded and then started to have violent seizures that soon became a nonstop. Just after the Olympics, which Shea is so grateful that his mom got to witness him win gold medal at Vancouver last February, shortly thereafter, doctors had to induce her into a coma, and with her husband and two sons at her side, she died in August of this summer. So, he's someone who definitely has grown up knowing how fragile life can be. Realizes how hard he's had to work to where he is, but also is wise enough to enjoy every moment, not take anything for granted. And I think when you go through that, I think there's a lot of people that go through cancer, and I can only speak for myself with my wife's diagnosis of breast cancer just a month or two after we were married. That once you go through something like that, it not just only changes the person that is inflicted by the disease, but it definitely affects those close to them, because you can't help but by osmosis take on a new belief in life and try to make the most of every day definitely become that much stronger, because if you're watching the one person that is most affected by it, battle through it. It's hard for you to complain about things at work or, you know, when the light changes too quickly at the stop sign or whatever else, you know. And so it was awesome to be able to talk to Shay about that. You know, we connected as being caregivers for people with cancer, and I was just really grateful for him to allow me to share his story, because it takes a lot of trust in a hockey player or in anyone to sort of let a stranger share their intimate details and about their families. And I only hope I did Shay and Tracy proud.
I believe you did. You wrote with real sensitivity, and it was a touching. For those who have not read it, you can go online to Vancouver Sun in Walker and just check on Shay Weber or Google if you want. It's a very, very well done story, I believe. Back to the Canucks here. What is the mood of the team after dodging the bullet with the Hawks and then a quick turnaround to play a game that they won, but there didn't seem to be a lot of energy in it? Was that the kind of game they needed, or did they just, you know, play just well enough to win?
You know, I talked to a couple of guys after the series, and you know, I think the best thing for them was to get right back on the horse, because they didn't have any time to sort of appreciate or get too big on what that win meant. You know, I think there was a real even, you know, I was talking to some people out in the city last night, and the whole town was sort of shut down for the game seven against Chicago. And then last night it was almost like it was just the regular season out at the bars and things like that, because I think everyone was so emotionally invested in that Chicago series. You know, but the players were saying, yeah, we had our night to think about it and enjoy it, and it was right back to work on Wednesday, and Thursday was the game. So I think it worked in their favor, because, you know, and one thing I don't know if your listeners realize, but you talk about a crazy 24 hours. Alex Burrows, who scored both goals in that game seven, took a penalty in overtime, and then came back to score the winning goal a couple of minutes later. Within 24 hours, was a father to his first child, Victoria, him and his wife had. So that was at 9 o'clock on Wednesday, so he had to shut her down soon after and get ready for tomorrow's game. So I think that's just a little indicative of what yesterday's game was like. I think Vancouver played well enough to win. It could have been a different story if it wasn't for Pekka-Rinne, like I mentioned, but it was hardly the emotional and intense sort of rivalry that that the Chicago series sort of really encapsulated a Stanley Cup final more than a first round series. But yeah, back to your question, I think this is something for Vancouver to build on. I think in terms of Nashville, at least they can tell themselves that they played probably their worst game of the playoffs and only lost 1-0 to the President's Trophy winners. So, yeah, I expect a different story in Game 2. I don't expect this to be a quick series. I did expect it to be a low-scoring series. You know, only time will tell in terms of where this goes. I don't think we've seen the best of both teams.
No, I agree. The thing that impressed me most from yesterday was actually after the game, where they were basically talking to the whole team, and I can't remember which Sedin was talking about, the fact that they really feel like they're going to come out of their slump. It's not like, you know, they're squeezing their sticks too tight, and there was a real calm about it. I think this team has really grown up in the last couple of years and are trusting that things will come back if they keep doing the right things. Do you agree with that, that they've grown up, they've more matured as a team?
Yeah, I think they've matured as a team. I think they've really have a faith and a belief in each other. I really think this is a team that all year has really balanced that fine line between emotion and non-emotion, where what I'm trying to say is, in terms of, they never let their highs too high and they never let their lows too low. And, you know, I've spoke with a couple of the guys off the record about this, and it comes down to, you know, from their beliefs. And I think the Vancouver Canucks are one of the leading teams in terms of going outside the box to think about different things. And their belief is, you know, if you can save energy worrying about not worrying about things, that's more energy you can put onto into the game. So by not letting their highs too high and their lows too low, they're maintaining a level course and they're maintaining an energy level that rides through the year rather than having to get up and get down or pick themselves up from bad performances, which they've had this year and they've had against Edmonton. Let's be honest, in the end of the regular season. So this is a team that really has taken on the identity of the Sedins. Henrik, their captain, and Daniel, two of the longer-serving Canucks. So, these are guys that are unflappable. They never see that get too frustrated. They've been dogged by questions by the media their whole careers, yet they stick in there. They answer it. They answer it as professionals. And I think you've seen that with there's been many stories this year in this market anyways about how Alex Burrows and Ryan Kessler have got away from the chirping, have got away from trying to get on the ref case. And again, I think that comes from your leadership group, which is led by the Sedins.
And a few more questions here, mostly to do with injury. Let's get an update, if I can, about Salo, Schneider, and if you've heard anything, I know he's not back this series, about Malhotra, how things are going and progressing.
Well, I'll start with Malhotra. He's around the team. We don't get to see him a lot. He's never really he put out a statement a couple of weeks ago saying that his vision has been restored in the eye, which is obviously a positive sign. But my understanding is that he's around the team. The team wants him around. He wants to be around them. He's an incredibly intelligent hockey player, and I'm sure they're picking his brain in terms of players and face-offs and different things like that. The hope and my prayers are that Manny is back next year. Corey Schneider took the day off after he was pulled or had to pull himself from game six with dehydration and then was back on the ice on Wednesday for practice. Thursday for yesterday's skate, and backed up Luongo and speaking with him. He seems fine. It's something that he's gone through in the past, and him and the trainers and the Canucks sports staff are going to try and tweak his drinks and fluids to maintain his just the things that go on with the body and adrenaline and sweating and all the things that come with being a professional athlete. And Salo, of course, we don't know much about. He's day-to-day, we've been told. He hasn't practiced since sustaining the injury. That's the thing about this depth on this defense. Sammy Salo goes out, and Aaron Rome and Keith Ballard and Andrew Albers are all there. So, it's really, you hate to say a non-story here, but it really hasn't been talked about a lot because of the depth that Vancouver has in its eight defensemen.
Final one here. Elaine Vigneault and Trotz, as a matter of fact, have been nominated for Coach of the Year. Was this his Vigneault's best coaching job this year?
I think it was in terms of he managed his players probably better than he ever has. He had a room that a lot of those guys had played for him before for a long time, and just like anything, you get comfortable with what you can and what you can't expect. And speaking with Roberto Luongo, LA is someone who micromanages. He lets his coaches do what they're hired to do, and that means Newell Brown with the power play and the specialty teams and Rick Bowness, who's been a head coach in this league before, with the defense, and of course the addition of Rolly Melanson as the goaltending coach to deal with Corey and Roberto. And I think that's probably been his biggest asset, is just having the faith in these guys to do their job and him coming in. And a couple of players were asked about that very question, and what kind of style does Alain have inside the room, and to their credit, they're like, that's for us to know and for you guys to try and figure out or guess, because we don't want to give anything away. And I get the sense that Alain has a deep amount of trust in his team, And, you know, even when they were down 3-0, obviously the voting is done before the playoffs, but even when they were down up 3-0 and then started to lose those three games to tie it, you never got a sense from him that he had lost faith or was outwardly angry with what was happening. And, you know, I think that goes a long way with players because, you know, just like ourselves, when we have a bad day at work, we're the first ones to know it, and the players are the same. And the last thing you need is your boss over your shoulder. You're telling you what you've done wrong. You just hope that they stand back and give you the faith that, you know what, not going to make the same mistakes twice. I think he's done that this year, and it's given him great results. My only hope is that, that he gets the credit for what he's done, you know, and I think that's not to limit what Dan Bylsma has done with Pittsburgh without, Crosby for a lot of the season. Same with Barry Trotz with a team that's, you know, he always seems to get the most out of the least in terms of his players. But you know, I think with the players that the Canucks have, I just hope that doesn't supersede what Elaine has done this year.
Walker, big talker, I'll be reading you. Make sure to make me look cool to my kids, okay?
Hey, no problem, and I appreciate the time. And, you know, I just want to thank your listeners for giving me the opportunity.
That's Ian Walker from the Vancouver Sun. Interesting guy. He writes some great articles. If you've never read the Weber story, is excellent, and he's doing a really nice rundown on that. What has been a slow series so far, but I imagine it'll be much better as they... Nashville's a hell of a team. They really are, and they could win that series. And you know what? They didn't show a lot except for their goaltender in game number one, but I'm sure it'll be a little bit different in the game tonight. Also today, at 1 o'clock this afternoon, the Bruins and the Flyers get underway. It'll be a very interesting contest. We'll update you throughout the day on that one. We're live at the Pine for Nation Radio and Edmonton Sports Radio, Team 1260, downtown Jasper and 109th Street. Until 2 o'clock today, drop by and say hello if you get a chance. You can also email us at nationradio@theteam1260.com. Coming up, we're going to talk to Todd Nelson from the Oklahoma City Barons.